It's an honor to be able to learn together with you today, this afternoon. So we're getting close to the Yom Tov of Pesach, so the thought was that we would discuss something related to the Yom Tov of Pesach. And there's probably no greater symbol of Pesach than matzah, maybe like aluminum foil. But other than that, matzah is probably the greatest symbol of the Yom Tov of Pesach. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about matzah, and particularly whether matzah is a mitzvah. Well, if that were really the whole issue, whether matzah is a mitzvah, the shiur would be very short. Of course, matzah is a mitzvah. In fact, according to, I think the Chasam Sofer points out, it is the only mitzvahs achilo we still have bizman hazeh. It is the only mitzvah to eat a particular item that we still have on a doraisa level, on a Torah level nowadays. Back in the days, and Be'ez Hashem in the future days, when we have a Beis HaMikdash, there will be a mitzvah doraisa to eat kudshim, to eat karbanos, there will be a mitzvah doraisa to eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, there will be a mitzvah doraisa for a Kohen to eat truma, but the only mitzvah doraisa to eat a particular food is the mitzvah doraisa to eat matzah bizman hazeh. We happen to paskin that morar is only midrabanan bizman hazeh. It is not a mitzvah doraisa. So matzah certainly is deserving of its station in life, so to speak, as the symbol of Pesach. But what I wanted to delve into a little bit more is what exactly is the nature of this mitzvah. Meaning, we know certainly that on the first night of Pesach, one must eat a kezias of matzah. A kezias of matzah, and that applies men, women alike, children not as much, depending how old they are, they should certainly try, but men and women are obligated certainly to eat a kezias of matzah. The Gemara tells us that even though matzah is a mitzvah sasei man grama, it is a time-bound positive mitzvah, and normally the rule is that women are exempt from time-bound positive mitzvahs, this does not fall in that exemption. The mitzvah of matzah is one of the exceptions to the exemption. In fact, it's been pointed out that there are probably more exceptions than there are the rule to that exemption of mitzvah seishas man grama, of time-bound positive mitzvahs. Rabbi Sobolovsky Shlita, one of our outstanding, brilliant Rosh Yeshiva, told me once that he once challenged his shir in yeshiva, and he asked, how many mitzvahs seishas man grama are women actually exempt from? Like, if you went through the list, how many time-bound positive mitzvahs are women actually exempt from? So he said the first boy to jump up and respond, sometimes people who are a little anxious just respond right away, said 1,000. So he said, well, let's take a step back. There are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. 365 of them are lo sases, are negative mitzvahs. Now, of the 248 positive mitzvahs, how many mitzvahs asei shazman grama are women actually exempt from? The answer is somewhere between 5 and 8. There aren't that many. And there are many, many more exceptions. Matzah is one of those exceptions. And the reason that matzah is an exception is explicit in the Gemara. The Gemara has a link, draws a link, that tells us that the Pasuk draws a link between the Isra of eating chametz and the mitzvah to eat matzah. And the Gemara therefore says, kol sheyeshno bebal tochal chametz, anyone who's not allowed to eat chametz, yeshno bekum echol matzah, is obligated to eat matzah. And therefore men and women are equally obligated to eat matzah. I recall when I was younger that my brother, who's a little older than me, came home from yeshiva, and apparently in yeshiva they taught him what a kezias is. And apparently a kezias is a lot bigger than an olive, because what my brother would try to stuff in his face in a matter of, in a span of 2 minutes, seemed like a lot more than a kezias. And I remember all of us around the table said, particularly I remember my mother saying, if that's what you got to do, I'm not doing that. Meaning, if that's really the amount of matzah you need to eat in that amount of time, that doesn't look really like something a human being should be doing. And it's actually a great disservice, I feel, for people to be extra machmir in the shear of matzah, and to say that matzah has to be this huge amount, because by being extra machmir in the shear of matzah, it's deterring people from doing the mitzvah properly. Meaning, we actually do have to eat a kezias of matzah within a certain amount of time, within a shear of kedei achilas pras, which is plenty of time. However big your kazayas of matzah is, you have six times the amount of time that it should take to eat it to be able to consume the kazayas. So it's plenty of time. You have plenty of time to eat it, but you eat like a normal person. You eat a reasonable amount of matzah. I think they say that if you take a hand shmura matzah, the size of your hand, that's usually a kazayas. That's pretty safely a kazayas. It's not an extraordinary amount of matzah. It's something that people can easily handle. But we should be matzah to do this, to make sure that we eat the proper shiurim at the proper time. One should not need to call Hatzalah in order to fulfill the mitzvos of the Seder. I remember when I was when I was a Talmud in Rav Shachter Shir many years ago in Yeshiva, so it was before YU Torah. So we didn't know that there were going to be tens of thousands of recordings of Rav Shachter Shiurim online readily available to us. So we thought that whatever we were recording then, we were capturing history, like we were capturing something very, very important. So he would sometimes issue Piskei Halacha in the context of the Shir. And Rav Shachter has a very lenient view as far as how much makes up a gezayis, how much matzah makes up a gezayis. So he would always tell us that Hatzalah tells me they're the busiest on the Seder night because of people trying to do crazy things with maror and with matzah. He said, just eat a normal amount. So we said, Rebbe, how big is a kazayas of matzah? And we were hoping to get it on the recording, you know, how big is a kazayas of matzah? And he said, about this big. So we said, you mean like 3 by 4 inches? He said, yes, around that. That sounds about right. Now he's recorded 1,000 times saying that. But so this is the mitzvah of matzah. But my question really goes beyond that. After you've had that kazayas, is there any further mitzvah to eat matzah? Certainly we have to go to extremes to be able to eat that kazayas. Meaning even if a person is maybe has a difficult time eating matzah, we try to figure it out, how they could possibly do it, how they could manage. Even if it involves something that we normally don't like to do, but someone has a difficult time chewing, we may even tell somebody on occasion to soak the matzah in water in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. I remember I once had a conversation with Rabbi Maurice Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, who was a neighbor of mine at the end of his life. He lived around the corner from me. He very wisely decided to retire to North Woodmere. Some people retired to Florida, some to Israel. Rabbi Maurice Lamb retired to North Woodmere. So Rabbi Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, and I used to enjoy a very good connection with him, very special relationship. So I remember one time before Pesach, he was very, very upset, and he said he doesn't think he's going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah this year. He just has too much difficulty digesting food, and he was very distraught by that. So I said, Rabbi Lamb, have you tried Sfardi matzah? And he said, what's Sfardi matzah? I said, well, they have like soft lafa-like matzahs. He said, what, you think I would eat something like that on Pesach? I'm not allowed to eat that on Pesach. I said, no, Rav Shechter wrote a tshuva explaining that even Ashkenazim are allowed to eat Sfardi matzah. He said, if you could show me that tshuva, I'll eat the Sfardi matzah. So I produced the tshuva for him, and I delivered a box of Sfardi matzah to his door. You have to keep it frozen until you eat it, until 5 minutes before you eat it. Otherwise it turns into like a brick because it's this thick matzah and it has special instructions. So I delivered it to him together with the tshuva, pasted it onto the box so that he doesn't miss it, and he gave it a try. He told me afterwards he's never going to try it again. He did not enjoy it at all, but it was worth a try because we try to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah to the best of our ability. Question is, okay, so now you've had that kazayas of matzah, is there any further mitzvah? And I mean that in two ways. Is there any further mitzvah to eat more on that night, on the night of the Seder, to have more than just a kazayas of matzah? And what about the rest of Pesach? What about on Chol HaMoed? Let's say you're not interested in eating matzah on Chol HaMoed. Is there anything pushing you to eat matzah? Certainly you can't eat chametz, but is there any reason specifically for a person to eat matzah? So it seems pretty explicit that there's really no mitzvah to eat matzah after the first night. At first glance, it seems pretty explicit because the Gemara tells us, and we're not going to see too many of these sources inside. If we did, we'd be here for a long time. But if you want to take take a peek later at source number one, the Gemara Maseches Pesachim on Daf Kuf Chaf, the Gemara has a phrase Ma Shvi'i Rishus Af Sheshes Yamim Rishus, that just like the last day of Pesach there's no obligation to eat matzah, so too the first 6 days of Pesach there's no obligation to eat matzah. The obligation is only at the Seder, only on the first night. Beyond that, you don't want to wash. I mean, obviously, for Yom Tov meals, you should wash. But on Chol HaMoed, you don't want to wash. Don't wash. You could have a salad every day. You could have, eggs or meat or chicken, whatever it is that you can eat that's not matzah, and that is perfectly fine. It seems like an open and shut case. Not only that, Rashi says explicitly on that Gemara, Rashi writes that Sheshes Yamim Rishus, that for 6 days there's no obligation to eat matzah. He has this phrase, She'im rotze yachales lechol basar below lechem, if you want, you can eat meat and don't eat any bread, don't eat anything you have to wash on. Or if you'd rather fast, go ahead and fast, don't eat anything. There's no obligation, says Rashi, to eat matzah after the first night. In fact, in Sukkah and Daf Chav Zayin, Rashi also has this comment that eating matzah after the first day is not obligatory. He says, Im basalechol, if you want to eat, tehei achilas chametz v'lo chametz. Then you have to make sure that what you're eating is matzah and not chametz. But that's how Rashi understands, that if you want, and you want to wash, you want to have a full meal, okay, so then make sure it's matzah, make sure that it's not chametz. One should be careful that their matzah is not chametz, by the way. Sometimes there are people that eat matzah year-round, and apparently there are companies that produce kosher matzah, but not kosher for Pesach matzah, right? Not a kosher for Passover matzah. So one should be careful. In fact, there's a discussion I just spoke about in yeshiva yesterday. There is a minhag. I'm just curious how many people have this minhag. There is a minhag not to eat matzah for 30 days in advance of Pesach. Wow, a lot of people have this minhag. Okay, so my sister called me this past Erev Shabbos. My sister called me this past Erev Shabbos, and she said, I made matzo balls for Shabbos, and then I went to say good Shabbos to Ima, to Ima and Abba, and my parents live in Lawrence, and she said, I told Ima that I made matzo balls, and she said, no, 30 days before Pesach, you can't make matzo balls. I said, what? 30 days before Pesach, you can't make matzo balls? You're allowed to eat a matzo ball Erev Pesach if you want. I can't imagine that we have such a practice. But she said, growing up, that was Zaidi's minhag, is that my grandfather, no matzo products whatsoever. Right. So you have all of these. So the truth is, I couldn't find a minhag not to have matzah balls 30 days before Pesach. I did find a minhag not to eat matzah 30 days before Pesach, although that minhag did not make it into the Mishnah Berurah. The halacha is, one is not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Question is when that halacha kicks in. Some say as soon as the Isser of Achilas Chametz kicks in, that's when the Isser to eat matzah kicks in. Others say the morning of Erev Pesach, when you wake up in the morning. Others say, and this is our Moshe Feinstein Paskins, the night before Erev Pesach, that already on the night of Bedikas Chametz. That is the halacha, that on Erev Pesach, however you define Erev Pesach, those three possibilities, that's when it's usser to eat matzah, and that's what causes us fits when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos and we're trying to figure out how to have our Shabbos meals. That's when it's Erev Pesach. The Mishnah Berurah says that there's a minhag to start Rosh Chodesh Nisan, to already not eat matzah Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Mishnah Berurah makes no mention of a minhag of 30 days in advance of Pesach, but Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that he could understand where such a minhag would come from, that there is a halacha. The first halacha in all of Hilchos Pesach is Shol in Vidorshin Behilchos Pesach Shloshim Yom Lufnei Pesach, that one is supposed to learn about the halachos of Pesach for 30 days in advance of Pesach, which means that we're already thinking Pesach from Purim, right? What's everyone's first Pesach thought when you're looking at all the shalach manos you got and you're thinking, how am I going to get rid of this in time for Pesach? Baruch Hashem, in my house there are four teenage boys, not a problem. It's gotten rid of before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, even though there's Baruch Hashem an ample amount of Shalach Manos. But that is something that is on a person's mind already from 30 days in advance of Pesach. So Moshe says, yeah, so it makes sense that if one is going to try to build up an excitement for Matzah, so you want to refrain from Matzah so long as you're thinking about Pesach. I get where such a minhag, comes from. It's Chabad minhag, by the way. The Lubavitcher minhag is like that as well. I assume probably many sects of Hasidim have a similar practice of staying away for 30 days in advance, of Pesach. But I don't remember how we got to that. But on the first night, it seems clear from the Gemara, from Rashi, that only the first night is the mitzvah to eat matzah. After the first night, throughout the rest of Pesach, a person doesn't have to eat matzah. However, what throws a monkey wrench into the whole discussion is a minhag of the Gra. And the minhag of the Gra is quoted in a very authoritative source. There are a variety of sources for minhagim of the Vilna Gaon. It became somewhat of a popular thing to do, to try to follow various minhagim of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was one of those rare once in a generation, if that, once in very many generations, kind of genius, where he's viewed, even though he lived in the 19th century, he's viewed as someone who was a Rishon, as if he lived 600 years prior to when he actually lived. He was just, someone who was undoubtedly, and it's undisputed that he was Mishichmo Lamaila Mikola Am, that he was much greater than everybody else in his generation. So people tried to follow the Minhagim of the Vilna Gaon, so the 18th century. But his Talmud was Rav Chaim Volozhiner. He didn't really have Talmidim, you know, not dissimilar to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichrono Livracha, who just passed away. He's someone who didn't really have Talmidim. So we had a speaker in my shul last night who was very close with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So he spoke about his interactions with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Most people's interactions with Rav Chaim Kanievsky were probably like my interaction with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. You got about a half a second, and he said, Buha. And that was it. And Buha stood for Bracha V'Hatzlacha. And like, you were grateful for the opportunity to see this living embodiment of Torah, this person who dedicated his entire life to just learning Torah day and night and gaining an absolute mastery of the entirety of Torah. But this person actually had interactions with him where, you know, that he joked around with him and he asked him all of his shailas. So someone challenged me. I said, yeah, we're having a Talmud of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So someone challenged me. I said, Rav Chaim Kanievsky didn't have any Talmidim. He wasn't a Rebbe. He wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. He wasn't a Rav. He wasn't a Magid Shir. His godless was that he just learned Torah all day, all night. That's all he did. He would wake up at 3 a.m. every single day. The Rebbetzin would wake up at 3 a.m. also to make him his coffee. And she would say all of Tehillim, and he would do his chovos, which were to make sure that he finishes the entirety of Torah every year in advance of Pesach, which is, you know, Rav Shechter always says to us that a Jew has an obligation to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. So he always sees us smile when he says that, because like, who's going to learn Kol HaTorah Kula? And Rav Shechter always reassures us, no, it's not so hard to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. Kol HaTorah Kula fits on one bookshelf. It's just Bavli, Yerushalmi, Medrash, Tanakh, Shulchan Aruch. It fits all, you can fit it on one bookshelf. You can learn Kol HaTorah Kula. So as daunting as that might seem, Rav Chaim Kanievsky did it every single year. So he didn't have Talmidim in the conventional sense, but he had people that hung around enough that they were able to get a little more out of him than a Buha. Someone told me on Shabbos, Buha is Rashi Tevez, Beis Vav Hev, short for Bracha V'Hatzlacha, and he didn't want, he had so many people coming through to say Bracha V'Hatzlacha over and over again, apparently it was a lot, so he would say Buha. So someone told me over Shabbos that his uncle went to Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim said Buha, and his uncle said, Epis, maybe a longer Bracha, so Rav Chaim said, Buha. So he had a sense of humor as well. But the Vilna Gaon, similarly, didn't really have Talmidim. I mean, we say Rav Chaim Volozhiner is the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He wasn't really a Talmud in the conventional sense. He didn't attend the Shiurim of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon also was learning. He was the Gaon HaChassid MiVilna. During his lifetime, he was referred to as the Chassid MiVilna. That became an ironic name for him afterwards, considering his opposition to Hasidus, but he he was known as the Chassid Mivilna, and he was sitting and learning. But Rav Chaim Vilashner is known as one who spent enough time with the Vilna Gaon to be the authority on the Vilna Gaon. And there's a sefer called Maisa Rav of all of the Hanhagos of the Vilna Gaon, or many of the Hanhagos of the Vilna Gaon. And they went and they asked Rav Chaim Vilashner, his number one Talmud, for a haskama to the Sefer, to ensure that, for accuracy, to make sure that everything that they wrote in the Sefer is accurate. Because a lot of times, after a Gadol B'Torah passes away, a lot of people think they know all of the opinions and the hanhagos of that Gadol, and a lot of times things are inaccurate. Certainly in our yeshiva, we know that Rav Soloveitchik was many different people to many different people, right? And to actually be accurate about exactly, you know, what the anhagos were, what the practices were, you have to really speak to the people who were there, the people who spent a lot of time with him and really understood. So they asked Rav Chaim Vilashner to look at the Sefer Maaser Rav, and he said it's almost perfect. He said everything you say here makes sense. There are only two practices in the Sefer Maaser Rav that I don't think are correct. They left them in the Sefer, but there are two. He writes in his Haskama that he thinks are incorrect, but the rest seems to be on the money. It seems to be 100% accurate. Incidentally, one of the things that he says he thinks is incorrect is that it says that the Vilna Gaon, in Parsha Zachar, instead of reading the Pasuk, Timcha es Zecher Amalek, that the Vilna Gaon read it, Timcha es Zecher Amalek. Based on that line, the Mishnah Brura says, Vilna Gaon never said to read it twice. It says in Maaser Rav, Zecher Amalek. Based on that, the Mishnah Brura says, well, if everyone else says Zecher, but the Vilna Gaon says Zecher, then we should probably read it twice, to be Yotze, the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. So Mishnah Brura, that chumrah that we do in so many of our shuls, is in order to try to satisfy the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. That was one that Reb Chaim Vilashner pointed out. He said, I never heard him say Zecher Amalek. He said Zecher like everybody else. I don't know what you are talking about. So our whole minna, to try to read it twice to fulfill the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, according to Rav Chaim Vilashner, is not the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. Now, it's not unfounded. There are opinions that do say that it's Zecher. There are machlokas between the Balei HaMasorah. In fact, Moreno Rav Shachter Shlita once told me that, I meant to double check with him, because this was many years ago, but he told me that Rav Soloveitchik used to read the Pasuk in Ashrei twice every time he would say Ashrei. He would say, Zecher Rav Tuvcha Yabiv Eschas Yadenu, Zecher Rav Tuvcha Yaviv. He'd repeat the entire pasuk. That's a brisker chumrah, right? What a chumrah. Yashri is three times a day, and does it really matter if you say Zecher, Zecher? Probably not. But he wanted, for accuracy, just to be sure, he would say the pasuk in Ashri twice, the way we do by Parsha Zachar. But I'm getting off track over here. Back to our topic about matzah. Says the Vilna Gaon in Maaser Rav, Simen Kuf Pehe. This is in source number 7 on page number 4 for those who have the Mar Makomos and are interested. Toward the bottom of the page, I include nice little pictures over here. That's what they say the Vilna Gaon looked like. Shivas yamim tochal matzos, kol shiva mitzvah, says the Vilna Gaon. After we just got through saying how the Gemara is explicit, that there's only a mitzvah on the first night, and Rashi tells us, if you want to eat the rest of the days, you can, just don't eat chametz, but you don't have no obligation to eat anything the rest of the days, comes along the Vilna Gaon, kol shiva mitzvah. For 7 days you eat matzah, all 7 days is a mitzvah. Ve'eno kari la rishos el gabi laila rishona shichova. The fact that it's sometimes referred to as a rishos, it's not really a rishos. Rishos means something that's optional. It just means it's less of an obligation than the first night. But it's not really optional, meaning one is fulfilling a mitzvah throughout the entirety of Pesach when you eat matzah. That's why many people are makbid to only eat shmura matzah throughout Pesach, not because they're worried, for the most part, that there's a chashash chimutz if they have regular kosher for Passover matzah. That's usually not the concern. They're trying to fulfill a mitzvah with each kezayis of matzah that they eat. Through every time they have a matzah pizza, they want to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. And in order to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah, you want to have shmura matzah. So that's what they're trying to fulfill. The opinion of the Vilna Gaon, who, by the way, would not have had a problem with the matzah pizza because he did not have the minhag of Brachs. So the idea of eating matzah all 7 days is a mitzvah. What do I do with the Gemara? Gemara says it's a rishos. Rishos doesn't always mean something that's optional. Everything is relative. You know, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, Tfilas Arvis Rishos. that Mariv is a Rishus. And many understand that to mean, certainly when I taught in high school for 18 years, many of the high school students understood that that means that that's optional. If you feel like doing it, you can. If you don't feel like doing it, you don't. Says Tosfos Maseches Brachos, no, you're obligated to daven Mariv. Tfilas Arvis Rishus just means it's not quite the same level of chiyuv that Shachris and Mincha are. But it's certainly also a chiyuv. For women, it might be a little bit different, although I always like to point out that in the Rebbetzin Kanievsky biography, the biography of Reb Chaim's wife, it said that she was very makbid. Every single night she davened Marv with a minion. She would go to the shul is pretty close by. The Letterman shul is right near their home on Rechav Rishpam. But she would daven with a minion. She was makbid to daven with a minion every single night for Marv. Tfilas Arvis Rishul, says Tosos, just means it's not the same level of obligation. Similarly, says the Vilna Gaon, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah throughout all 7 days of Pesach. Rishus just means not the same level of obligation as the first night of Pesach, as the Seder night.
Would he make a bracha?
Oh, so let's get to that. So, meaning the question is, if it's really a mitzvah, so maybe you should recite a bracha throughout Pesach of Alach Asher Kiddushonu B'mitzvosav Vitzivanu Alach Ilas Matzah. Meaning, if it's really a mitzvah, why not say a bracha? Let's just take a step back for a moment and just discuss this concept. Meaning, Rashi was pretty explicit. You don't have to eat matzah on Chol HaMoed. You could choose to have salads and meats and chickens and things like that. Although I'm told there's going to be a chicken shortage this year, so good luck with that. But there is an option to have things that are not. I apologize if I just broke that news to anybody. Gourmet glass not that far away. Maybe you can pack up. But there is a concept. Apparently of a mitzvah kiyumis, that it's a mitzvah that if you choose to do, you're getting a mitzvah, but you're not obligated to do. That very concept, the fact that such a concept exists, that there's something called a mitzvah kiyumis, is a very great chiddush. Because after all, what is the shoresh of the word mitzvah? Tzav. What does tzav mean? A command. Mitzvah means something you're commanded to do. We don't have 613 nice ideas. We have 613 mitzvos, things that we're absolutely, absolutely obligated to do. A lot of times the world mistranslates the word mitzvah. You know, people often think mitzvah means a good deed. Mitzvos are also good deeds, but they are obligatory good deeds. We are commanded in these 613 good deeds. So what does that mean, that there's a mitzvah kiyumis, that there's such a concept? It's a great chiddush. Rav Shechter often pointed out to us the very notion that such a concept exists is a great chiddush. This notion was made famous in the last generation by Rav Moshe Feinstein, because Rav Moshe Feinstein held, he was asked about making aliyah, about moving to Eretz Yisrael, and about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So unlike the simple reading of the Psukim and the Ramban, that there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, which would mean that if it's doable and we can make it work, we should go and live in Eretz Yisrael. And unlike on the opposite side of the spectrum, the Satmar Rebbe, with his Maimer Mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, where he explains that no, not when there are Apikorsim there or whatever, and he has a whole Maimer in the opposite direction, Rav Moshe Feinstein takes like this middle approach. He says, if you go, it's amazing. You're fulfilling a mitzvah for sure, but you're not obligated to go. It's a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a mitzvah that when you do it, it's a fulfillment of a mitzvah. Absolutely. But not an obligatory mitzvah. And that was a great chiddush. Rav Shachter often points out, people don't realize how many chidushim Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote in his tshuvas. He looked like such a traditional rabbi that people assumed that everything he said was just whatever the standard tradition was. He was a great Bal Mechadesh. He had a lot of very, very fascinating, brilliant, new ideas. In fact, Rav Shachter would often comment that, still often comments, that that people would look at Rav Soloveitchik, in the years with the goatee and a modern suit, and they would say, oh, probably when he learns halacha, he's thinking of new things and new ways. He said Rav Soloveitchik was the most traditional halacha learner there was. If there was a minhag, he would spend hours trying to show how the minhag is based in the halacha and how everything comes back to the traditional halacha as we understand it. Rav Moshe, everyone would think, would be, in that mold. Rav Moshe has said these wild chidushim. chidushim. That he was Rav Moshe, he was entitled to say these chidushim, but he was a great Baal Mechadesh when it came to halacha. So this is one of those chidushim, that there's a mitzvah kiyumis. We do have other examples of a mitzvah kiyumis. One of the contemporary poskim from the Eidah Charedis in Yerushalayim, Rav Moshe Sternbach, writes that, you know, there is a halacha that if a kara shema velo diktek ba'osiyoseha, if a person read kriya shema and didn't pronounce every word 100% carefully, you yotzei the mitzvah. Not ideal, but you yotzei the mitzvah. You should try when you say shema to slow down a little bit and make sure you say every word carefully. A friend of mine, a fellow Davins in my shul, is in Avelus now, and he told me that every once in a while he catches a minyan at the Young Israel of Woodmere. And he said, like, for their instructions for the chazan at the Young Israel of Woodmere, maybe some of you can confirm this, that when you say Shema, you have to take 90 seconds to say Shema. You're not allowed to do it in less than 90 seconds. He said, it's hard because you have to, like, look at your watch when you start. Like, if you don't know when you started, I said, or you could daven slowly enough that you're sure that it took 90 seconds. That's your other option. You know, but you're supposed to say Shema slowly enough in order to pronounce every word. It's not like Tachnun where you could just pretend you're saying, I'm just joking, you're supposed to say Tachnun also. But you're supposed to be careful to say every single... By the way, we only have a few days of Tachnun left before we have to miss it for a month. So we're not going to be allowed to say Tachnun for a month. So let's try to be careful to maybe do an extra good job on Tachnun in the next few days, in our last opportunities to do so before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Always something I try to remind myself of, you know, right before the, especially the last Monday, Thursday Tachnun, before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, I always try to remind myself to do it a little bit better, you know, going into Chodesh Nisan. And I realized that I was going to even ask the Baal Tefillah in my shul to slow down this Thursday. Just give me an extra 2 minutes to say Tachnun. I never have the opportunity to say the whole Monday, Thursday Tachnun. It's very long. I try to say every word. Apparently, people can read a lot faster than I can, and so I always get 2/3 of Tachnun done. I pick different parts each time. Rav Shachter instructed me to do like that, but I never get the whole thing done. I wanted like this one last for a month, one last one. So I was telling a friend of mine. He said, "You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't change the shul's minhagim or the way the shul operates for just one time." And you know, you have to be sensitive to people who are in a rush. I said, "Oh, come on, no one's in a rush anymore. No one's going to work anymore. Everyone's working." I heard a lawyer in my shul talking to his friend after work yesterday. He said, big trial today. He said, oh, where? In my basement. You know, that's where everything happens nowadays. So then I realized I'm going to be on a plane Thursday morning. I'm going to Eretz Yisrael for the weekend, so for a bar mitzvah. So I'm not even going to be there to do it anyway. So it probably will be the fastest document ever, because I'm not even going to be there. But how do I get to... Oh, so Rav Moshe Sternbach discusses, what if a person said Kriya Shema, but they zipped right through it? And they were not mitaktek bosiyosa. They weren't so careful to pronounce every word 100% correctly. So Rav Sternbach says, say it again. Say it again slowly. Are you obligated to say it again slowly? Absolutely not. Gemara says you're yotzei, Shulchan Aruch says you're yotzei. But it's a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a mitzvah kiyumis to say it again. You fulfill a mitzvah, even though you're not obligated in the mitzvah to say it again slowly. You do have certain examples of a mitzvah kiyumis. The Ran writes in a tshuva that a woman's obligation in Puruvu is a mitzvah kiyumis, meaning the mitzvah of Puruvu is a mitzvah that men are obligated in. There are interesting discussions in Achronim why the mitzvah of Puruvu does not apply to women. Obviously, it's impossible for it to be fulfilled without a woman. When I meet with a young chassan and kala and they are talking about family planning and the like, I always make the point that Puruvu is a mitzvah in the Torah, not just any mitzvah in the Torah, it's the first mitzvah in the Torah. And I turn to the young man and I say, it's your mitzvah. And I turn to the young woman and I say, and he can't do that mitzvah without you, right? So the woman has to play an important role, obviously, in Puruvu. So says the Ran, it means that it's not a mitzvah chiyuvis. For a woman, it's a mitzvah kiyumis. For a man, it's a mitzvah chiyuvis. So we do have this concept that exists. The chiddush is that matzah is a mitzvah kiyumis. That's what the Vilna Gaon is telling us. Now the Mishnah Berurah raises the following suffix, and this talks to your question from before. Mishnah Berurah is unsure whether if there's a mitzvah to eat in Sukkah all 7 days also. I mean, let's say you're taking a family trip on Sukkot, a Chol HaMoed trip. I remember one year my wife and I decided that for Sukkot we're going to go sleep over somewhere, and we went to, I think, Springfield, Massachusetts. I don't know, just somewhere off the grid a little bit where there's a minion there, and we were able to bring food with us, and there's enough to do. There's a Six Flags and other things, and I think a Dr. Seuss Museum, although I guess he's been cancelled, so I don't know what about that. But there was enough to do for a couple of days. We were able to, problem is, what if you don't have a sukkah there? So, okay, so we won't wash. We won't have any meals that require a sukkah. Are you allowed to do that? Or is there a mitzvah to eat in sukkah all 7 days? Meaning, says the Mishmur, according to the Gra, that there's a mitzvah to eat matzah all 7 days of Pesach, and we know that we link the first night of Sukkot with the first night of Pesach in terms of the mitzvah, so maybe there should be a mitzvah to eat in Sukkah throughout the 7 days of Sukkot. The eighth day, Shmini Atzeres, that's not a mitzvah to eat in Sukkah. We only do that Mishum Sveika Diyoma, but the first 7 days, there should be a mitzvah maybe to eat in Sukkah, and he's not sure. And what's so stunning about that comment of the Mishnah Brura is, think about it, when you go into a sukkah on Chol HaMoed, and you wash, and you have a meal, you say a bracha, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav vitzivanu leishiv basukkah. We don't do that with matzah. And yet, he says, according to the Gra, I understand that there's a mitzvah to eat matzah all 7 days, but is there or isn't there a mitzvah to eat in sukkah? Of course there's a mitzvah to eat in sukkah all 7 days. We say a bracha when we eat in sukkah all 7 days. And also, why is that only something that relates to the Vilna Gaon? Even without the Vilna Gaon, forgetting about matzah, we eat in sukkah all 7 days and we say a bracha. Of course it's a mitzvah. So I think, and there are many, many, many other sources, all in the packets over here, that highlight this idea. The Vilna Gaon was not alone. There are many Rishonim that said explicitly, or at least implicitly, that there's a mitzvah kiyumis of matzah throughout the Yom Tov of Pesach. There's a Bala Ma'or that asks the question, why is it that we don't say a bracha on matzah? Kol Shiva. Why is it that we don't say a bracha of al achilas matzah throughout the Yontif of Pesach? And the Baal Amar says, because you could survive without it. And since you could live without it, you're not going to say a bracha, because you could do without the matzah. Now, the as opposed to sukkah, where if you have to sleep and eat in the sukkah, so you may be able to eat other things and therefore not require a sukkah, but you can't go 7 days without sleeping. It's impossible. The Gemara in the Nedarim says that a person who takes a neder that he's not going to sleep for 72 hours straight right away should absolve himself of that neder. Don't even wait for the 72 hours, because you know you've already violated it. It's impossible to go 72 hours straight without sleeping. So you can't go through Sukkot without being in a sukkah. But you can go through Pesach without eating matzah. So why didn't the Baal Amar just say very simply, you know why you don't say a bracha on matzah kol shiva? Because there's no mitzvah. He could have just said there's no mitzvah. The mitzvah is only on the first night. You see that the Baal Amar already held, like the Vilna Gaon, that there is a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah to eat matzah throughout the rest of Yom Tov. Maybe not the same mitzvah, but there is some sort of mitzvah. There's a Chizkuni that indicates this way. There's an Ibn Ezra that indicates this way. The Rambam may indicate this way. We don't have time to go into how all of that is true. But again, it's well documented that the Vilna Gaon was not all alone in this idea that matzah is a mitzvah kiyumis. But here's the Chiddush that I wanted to share with you. And this is a Chiddush that I saw from one of the great Rosh Yeshiva of Beis Medrash Gavoa of Lakewood, Rav Yeruchim Olshin Shlita, who has a very strong ties to our community, actually. First cousin lived here. And their kids still live here. So Rav Yeruchim Olshin of Lakewood, if you're curious what he looks like, I have a picture of him in source number 15 on page 6, suggests the following idea. He suggests that really there are three levels of mitzvah. You know, we spent the whole time developing the idea that there's such a thing called a mitzvah kiyumis. It could be that there's a third level. There's mitzvah that's an absolute obligation. Then there's a mitzvah that's kiyumis. There's a mitzvah that is not an absolute obligation. You don't have to go out of your way to do. It's a requirement, but it wouldn't be a bittul mitzvah if you didn't do it, meaning it is something that's expected of us, even though it's not an absolute requirement. And then there's ihidur. There's a mitzvah that is a mitzvah kiyumis, but it's more like ihidur. It's not something that you're obligated to do. It's not something that we're even expected to do. We're not required at all. We can choose to do other good deeds rather than that mitzvah. So these are the three madregas. So again, the first madrega is chiyuvis, and if you ignore a mitzvah chiyuvis, it is a bittul mitzvah. If you do not eat a kazayis of matzah on the first night of Pesach, that is a bittul mitzvah. It is an absolute obligation. If Hashem requires it of us to the max, and we must do it to the extent that we're physically capable of doing so. Level two, mitzvah kiyumis. It's a requirement, but failure to do it is not called a bittul mitzvah. It's something that we're supposed to do, we're expected to do, but failure to do it is not a demerit. And then you have hidur. A hidur is not really required at all, but it is the best, it's best practice, that it's still connected to the mitzvah. And one might suggest that explains that Mishnah Brura Safek about should we or shouldn't we eat in Sukkah throughout all 7 days. Of course, the Mishnah Brura is well aware that we recite a bracha on Sukkah all 7 days. He was aware that there's a mitzvah kiyumis called Shivas Yimei HaSukkah. He wanted to know about level two. He knew that level three, for sure we have. For sure it is a mitzvah of some sort. But he wanted to know, is it an expectation also? It may not be a bittul mitzvah not to, but is it an expectation that we do, that we ought to, that we should sit in Sukkah throughout the 7 days? And each level may involve some kiyum when it comes to matzah. I mean, there may be some application of matzah on each level. First of all, the kezayis rishon, that first kezayis of matzah on the night of the Seder, chiyuvis, absolutely obligated, that is category one, that is level one, there's no doubt. What about the rest of the days of Pesach? Maybe that's where the Vilna Gaon and everybody else veer from each other. They're not arguing whether there's a mitzvah. Everyone agrees, all these rishonim say it's a mitzvah. What did the Vilna Gaon, what was the Vilna Gaon mechadesh when he says it's a mitzvah? It could be that everybody else thought it's a level three mitzvah. A hidur, a nice thing. Look, matzah is the symbol of Pesach, so I'm going to participate in this great symbol of Pesach. But the Vilna Gaon said, no, not just a hidur, a mitzvah kiyumis that's level two. It's an expectation. Is it a bittul mitzvah if you don't? No, it's not a bittul mitzvah if you don't. But it's an expectation, something that we ought to do, something that we're expected to do. You know, certainly when we talk about lechem oni, halach ma'anya, on the night of the Seder, so that certainly that is something that could apply for all 7 days of Pesach. That it's lechem oni, it's a poor man's bread. When we talk about zecher l'chipazon, that matzah represents the rush out of Mitzrayim, that might only be on the first night. That might only be at the Seder. We don't have to recall the rush out of Mitzrayim on the other days. That's when we talk about the mitzvah of Su'udas Yom Tov, that probably applies throughout the Yom Tov of Pesach. Matzah is a way to fulfill the mitzvah of Sudas Yom Tov. Matzah itself plays so many different roles, some of which are only about that first kezayis. Others are about the entire Yom Tov. For example, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, Lechem Oni is Lechem She'onim Alav Dvarim Harbei. We use matzah as a prop for the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. It used to be, before they had plastic frogs for people to throw around at their Seder, matzah was the prop, right? We used matzah and we would say, matzah zu al shema. Why are we eating this matzah? Oh, because this represents, you know, there is Sfardi Minhagim that the Kafah Chaim records of people putting the matzah on their shoulder and walking around on the table. So matzah, that's the matzah is the prop for the Seder. That's for the whole Seder night. That's as long as there's a mitzvah, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Matzah itself is so dynamic. It plays so many different roles. Some of those roles are only for that first kezayis. Some of those roles are for the entire first night. Some of the roles that matzah plays are throughout the entirety of Yom Tov, because it exists on these three different planes, as a mitzvah chiyuvis, as a mitzvah kiyumis, and as a hidur as well. And just to wrap it up a little bit, I think that serves as a model for many, many different things that we do in life. In life, a lot of times we have three different levels of expectations of us. There are things that we must do, that it's non-negotiable, and it's an absolute expectation of us. There are things that we ought to do, and as good, reasonable people, there's an expectation that we do those things, even though you can't necessarily fault us for not doing them. And then there's that extra step, that extra hidur, that extra something that is always best if we engage. And this is true not only on Bein Adam L'Makom, it's true on Bein Adam L'Chavero as well. You ever have to apologize to a person? So the bare minimum is you have to say the words, I'm sorry. Right? You have to say those words. You ever have a child that gets into a fight with another child or does something to another child and, you know, you say, apologize to him. I'm sorry. Right? So he fulfilled the bare minimum obligation. Apologies don't really work that way. They say that 93% of communication is nonverbal, and therefore all of his, while the words were, I'm sorry, all of his nonverbal communication was, I'm really not sorry. But at least the bare minimum obligation. And then there's exuding some sincerity in the apology. And that's an expectation. Maybe not a requirement. You can't force the kid to exude sincerity, but it's something that's expected of him if he's going to apologize properly. And then there's going beyond. There's showing how sorry you are by going out of your way to buy a gift, to write a note, to do something. Gratitude as well. You know, you can say the words, thank you. You can send a thank you card, which is, you know, maybe a nice thing to do and expected of us. And then you can go out of your way to look for things to be thankful for. And that would be the level of hidur. In each of our interactions with Ribbono Shel Olam, Bein Adam L'Makom, and Bein Adam L'Chavero, it's important to exist on all three planes. We have to make sure that we know what our obligations are and never shirk our responsibilities and ignore our obligations. We should also know beyond that what the Ratzon Hashem is, what's expected of us, even if it's not necessarily a technical obligation. And then we should always be looking to exist on that third level as well, that level of hidur, of going beyond what people would ever expect of us in order to reach out to another person or to reach out in our service, Bein Adam L'Makom, in looking for opportunities to be able to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we should always be doing that in Be'ezras Hashem with such an attitude. Have a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.